Right, are we ready? Good morning, everyone. The meeting of the San Francisco Human Services Commission is called to order. Once again, good morning. Under the roll call, we just ask that we would keep good thoughts for our chairperson, Mr. Khan, who is not able to be with us this morning and is hospitalized. So please keep a good thought up for him. Looking to my left and to my right, we are all here, and I'm glad to be back. I've been traveling quite a bit over this last month or two, so it's good to see all of you and good to see the agency. Good morning. Colleagues, the agenda is before you. We accept the agenda for the day.
So moved.
Right, it is moved and seconded. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, right. Next item is the adoption of the minutes, March 22nd.
So moved.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It is done. Mr. Rohr, good morning, sir.
Good morning, commissioners. I'll start with a report from the federal level, and there's several items I want to report, and none of them are very good, which I guess isn't surprising. So the first is the farm bill was released earlier this month by the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, and it's important for us, of course, because SNAP, CalFresh in California, is authorized by the farm bill. And the SNAP portion of the farm bill includes several significant proposed changes to the current operations of our CalFresh program. These are all just proposals, of course, but basically, sort of in a nutshell, restricting eligibility and trying to lower the number of SNAP recipients nationwide, and in a number of ways they're proposing to do this. One is to expand the time limits and the work requirements beyond the current ABOD requirement. So this would expand work requirements for every family or individual on CalFresh who is able to work. Harsher penalties for those who are not complying with the work requirements, from 12 to 36 months of restriction of receipt. not providing, so while requiring all of us to, or requiring all of the recipients to work, not providing sufficient funding for agencies, human services agencies, to actually provide work opportunities. As you know, ABODs in San Francisco are already subject to the work requirements, and that'll begin in September of 2018. 4 million SNAP recipients in California would be affected should these proposals go through in a current form under the Farm Bill. We're working with our lobbyists, we're working with our partners, the County Welfare Directors Association, the National Association of County Human Services Agencies, our lobbyists, and are drafting a letter for Mayor Farrell to send to the Ag Committee and other members of Congress who will be deliberating the bill. So I'll keep you posted on the progress of that. Also related to SNAP, what's called an advanced notice of public rulemaking was issued. And what this is that when the federal government is proposing to change rules to a federal program, they post sort of a broad sort of area of issues that they're proposing to look at, and they invite comment. And so this SNAP notice of public rulemaking came out for localities and other stakeholders to provide comments. And basically it was around proposed changes to the work requirements for ABODs on SNAP, and inviting comment. And our comments were really around providing us more flexibility in the types of work we can offer, work options we can offer folks who are receiving CalFresh. Talking about the importance of CalFresh to providing a safety net for families and individuals, and that it shouldn't be linked even to work requirements, that it really is a vital safety net and entitlement, and shouldn't be coupled with restrictions and additional requirements. We don't know where this is going to go. The Farm Bill, of course, frames a lot of this stuff, but this actually came from USDA. So we'll see. I wouldn't, you know, given, of course, this administration, given the direction that they're going on all of the entitlement programs, this is just another way, I think, for them to justify expanding work requirements for recipients of food support. And then third, at the federal level, it doesn't get any better. There was an executive order issued a number of weeks ago, and the executive order was called, I'm quoting it, it's called Reducing Poverty in America by Promoting Opportunity and Economic Mobility. And what this executive order does, it directs the relevant cabinet departments to provide within 3 months a list of potential regulatory or policy changes to the way benefits and services are provided to families and individuals. And then the department, subsequent to those, the first 3 months, they have another 90 days to take any administrative action to make these changes. So basically what they're doing is whatever the federal agencies can do that don't require changes in law to restrict benefits is what they're proposing to do. In the executive order, the language in the executive order was quite troubling. Sort of one sentence kind of sums up the direction that the administration is going, and it says, quote, many of the programs designed to help families and individuals, many of the programs designed to help families have instead delayed economic independence, perpetuated poverty, and weakened family bonds. And this harkens back to the old sort of public assistance promotes and creates dependency, which isn't supported by any research or data. So what does the executive order say? It says it wants to focus on strengthening, enforcing, and where legally permissible, adding new work requirements above those that are already in law. Requires federal agencies to review all regulations and guidance related to waivers, exemptions, or exceptions for public assistance program eligibility. So that's code for where can we further restrict eligibility through regulation changes rather than through law changes. And then the third is around public charge. And what the executive order is directing agencies to do is to list all of the federal programs and benefits that are provided to qualified aliens, to legal non-citizens, and all program and benefits that they're currently eligible to receive. And the reason that the executive order includes this is because it seems that the Trump administration wants to expand the current public charge federal regulations. And so, which leads me to the fourth thing that the feds have done in the last month, and this is changes in how public charge is applied to recipients of public assistance. The public charge is when someone who is a legal non-citizen is attempting to change status, or someone who is on a visa is attempting to change status, if they're receiving cash assistance, that could be counted against or sort of a negative check mark against a progression towards a change in immigration status. It currently only applies to cash assistance, and it applies to Medi-Cal if it's institutional care. The public charge rule that was leaked to the Washington Post basically expands this public charge rule to every single federal benefit program. So it would be SNAP, Medi-Cal, the Children's Health Insurance Program, Section 8, public housing, child care subsidies like Head Start, WIC, the Women, Infant, and Children program, commodity supplemental food program, sort of any, if there's any federal dollar going to a legal non-citizen, then that would all fall under public charge. This is not change in law, this is not change in anything, this is just a leaked sort of proposed federal regulation change. So nothing formally or officially has been done, but it really is, it seems imminent that there are going to be significant changes to the way legal non-citizens interact with public benefits. And so what are we doing locally? We're partnering with the city's Office of Immigrant Affairs, the city attorney, the mayor's office, other legal advocates, and community-based organizations, really to discuss both advocacy at the federal level, but also messaging strategies. You know, these changes can have a significant chilling effect on legal non-citizens who are eligible for our programs. You know, they could cause them to withdraw from receiving benefits, certainly cause them not to apply for benefits that they're entitled to. You know, and these are vital supports that are helping our families and single adults, you know, live in San Francisco, whether it's health insurance through Medi-Cal, food support through CalFresh, or cash assistance through CalWORKs or our county adult assistance program. So we're very concerned, but the city is, of course, working together to see what we can do to mitigate any harm that these changes might cause. At the state level, we're really just waiting for the May revise. The last month have been the budget hearings and all the subcommittees. There's various items that we're tracking that I've talked to you about before. So the May revise will be issued the second week of May, and hopefully it'll include changes that we've been advocating for around increased funding for CalWORKs as well as for several other administrative programs. Couple of items on your agenda today around May being both CalFresh Awareness Month but also being Foster Care Month. For CalFresh Awareness Month, we'll be partnering with the Food Bank and others to pitch local reporters on hunger awareness stories, you know, sort of getting the word out on about CalFresh, how to apply, sort of promoting how really it's really easy now to apply for CalFresh. There's a lot of different ways to do that and hopefully get more households to receive that important benefit. May is also Foster Care Month, and we have on our agenda a proclamation recognizing our resource families, and I think several of them are here today. Really recognizing the amazing work that they do, you know, every day to care for our kids who are in their care and in our care. We do have our annual caregiver appreciation event Friday, May 18th. You should have received an invitation. If you haven't already, you will soon. May 18th from 6:30 to 10 at the South San Francisco Conference Center. This is a nice event to honor our resource families. And then also, we've been partnering for a number of years with Braid Mission on increasing the number of resource families in San Francisco. And we're partnering with them to do a presentation to the Interfaith Council's monthly breakfast on May 10th. Really covering the importance of resource families in San Francisco and opportunities also to mentor foster youth. Some of the key messages we're going to be talking about to the Interfaith Council, but also to the community at large, is that the San Francisco's foster youth need everyone's help. We currently send about 60% of our foster youth out of county and 25% of them out of the Bay Area. And of course, we want to keep children as close as possible to their homes, to their schools, to the neighborhoods that they are familiar with and have lived in. We have set a goal that every foster child who is not a relative, who is not placed with a relative, would be able to live in San Francisco, which means we're going to need probably 100 new homes in the city. Mm. We have a lot of efforts, a lot of partnerships we're embarking on, one with the Housing Authority to provide rental vouchers for prospective foster parents to allow them to live in the city, and a lot of other neat partnerships. And we're going to be talking to the Interfaith Council about that and really how can congregations be engaged to help recruit resource families, foster parents in San Francisco. Now just briefly in the divisions, and then I'll turn it back over to the agenda. In CalWORKs, I just want to give you a report on our housing support program, which is the program that we have in CalWORKs that provides rental subsidies to our homeless families. We've now served over 300. We've provided over 300 families, homeless families now, with either one-time cash supports to remain in their housing or rental subsidies. We currently have 125 in the program, and 180 have exited the program. One, you know, sort of similar to having to place, you know, foster kids out of San Francisco, 88% of the families to whom we've provided subsidies have moved out of the county. Only 12% have been able to use that subsidy to stay in San Francisco. It's really just an indication, of course, of the extremely high rental housing market here. You know, it's important to know that we're not, you know, saying to families, you know, you must leave. We're saying you have a rental subsidy, and we try to find a place in San Francisco, and we're just not able to with our partnerships with Hamilton Family Center and others. And they're ending up in largely in Alameda County, and Contra Costa counties. Project 500, which is Mayor Lee's sort of legacy program to move ultimately 500 families permanently out of poverty in San Francisco, we're now at 90% capacity. We have 105 children who are enrolled and over 95 families, I think, we're at. The initial data results, we're making good progress towards self-sufficiency for those first 190 or so families. It's really designed as sort of a learning lab, or what is working with families who have, you know, suffered, you know, been in poverty for generations, and trying to figure out sort of what's working, you know, what's not working, of course. And the idea is, after the evaluation, which is going to start probably in early 2019, is completed, we would hope to be able to have this be San Francisco's or the Human Services Agency's new strategy to get to address all families that we're serving, not just, you know, 500 in this program, but every family who's on CalWORKs. This would be the frame for a better and improved approach at helping them move out of poverty. In our SF Benefits Net, you know, CalFresh and Medi-Cal programs, we've finally hired our new site directors for 1235 Mission Street and 1440 Harrison. There are Cynthia Martinez and Susie Lau. So congratulations to both of them. And with these two new hires, we're close to completing the management reorganization that we've done under SFBN. And just to remind you, this is really when the Affordable Care Act came about, you know, it increased the linkage or overlap of CalFresh and Medi-Cal, and so we combined the eligibility work of those two programs into SF Benefits Net. And so now at both 1235 Mission and 1440 Harrison, applicants, clients can get to apply for and receive both of those benefits at either site. In CalFresh, we continue to prepare for implementation of the ABOD work requirements that will begin in September. New forms, new business processes, training have been and continue to be conducted. We will be prepared when August comes. Again, it's going to affect perhaps 4,000 recipients in San Francisco. We're having conversations with community-based organizations and other city departments, so they know about the changes, and then they can also support our efforts to help folks retain their benefits through either through subsidized employment slots or other employment training or work activities that CBOs could provide. And then lastly, in Family and Children Services, it continues to be the continuum of care reform and implementation of CCR. CCR will not work without increasing the number of resource families, the number of foster families, because the whole idea is that institutional and group home stays are short-term and therapeutic, and so we need lower levels of care for our kids. So we continue to aggressively work on recruitment, again, supporting the implementation. We've partnered with a local FFA, foster family agency, called Alternative Family Services, on a grant that we got from the Walter S. Johnson Foundation to focus recruitment efforts specifically on Latino and Spanish-speaking foster homes. We're also finalizing contracts with Bay Area-wide foster family agencies to help do the approvals for our out-of-county relative caregivers, because we're under the gun to do those within 90 days. And so these contracts will allow our staff to focus on the San Francisco relative caregivers and eliminate the backlog that we currently have with approving them. And then we're reviewing all youth who are currently in group homes to determine whether they should be placed in the short-term therapeutic, which is called an STRTP, which is a short-term therapeutic placement. There's too many acronyms in our agency. Basically, it's a six-month therapeutic stay rather than a long-term group home. And we're assessing which kids would go into there versus kids who could be stepped down into family-based care. Working with our behavioral health partners, Children's Mental Health, and two foster family agencies to develop homes that are not STRTPs, not group homes, but they're foster homes that can provide that therapeutic foster care, therapeutic support in the context of a home rather than in a institution, which is the right thing to do. It's very, very difficult work, and CCR, as I said before, is one of the, if not the biggest reforms in child welfare in my tenure, and recognizing management and staff and Family and Children Services, that's a huge lift, and thanking them for their work, but also our resource families that are here, because they play a critical role as well. So I just want to thank them in advance of Sophia's proclamation for their partnership with the agency. And I'll conclude with that. Any questions or comments?
Questions? Comments?
Is there any relief in sight for the feds, or is this just the first wave of all this crap going on to really undermine the limited safety net that we currently have?
you know, crap is probably an appropriate term, yeah. You know, I wish I could say I was surprised. I'm not. You know, I think that the administration recognizes that there's so many of these changes that they want to do are so draconian that they're not going to pass, they wouldn't pass in Congress. So they're going at it administratively, you know, directing, you know, where can departments or where can federal agencies, you know, increase the requirements and lower the roles. I would anticipate, you know, them pushing the edge of the envelope and resulting in lawsuits and, you know, sort of, you know, playing out over time. You know, hopefully we can extend the length of time enough to have a change in administrations in a couple years. But, you know, it's a difficult, you know, I mean, I'm not really joking. It's a difficult field to be in right now, and, you know, and I'm concerned for the families and seniors and single adults that we serve, because everything coming out of this administration is about restricting vital social supports and the safety net, and really not recognizing the value that we add to moving families out of poverty and providing them work opportunities and child care and housing supports and the like. It's not just HHS, it's, you know, restrictions in HUD too, you know, reducing the number of Section 8 vouchers, reducing support for public housing. You're seeing proposals to restrict that all across the board. It's grim.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Is the agency involved at all in this current discussion about moving families into a school?
No.
Homeless families?
You're referring to the Chronicle story on the shelter at one of the middle schools, I think. We have not been engaged in conversations with either the school district or the new department on the proposal. I would imagine if it did move forward, we'd certainly be involved in terms of the, you know, extent that these are families who either could be served by our agency or who currently are, to make sure they're getting the benefits and supports they need. But at this point, I think it's just sort of an idea that hasn't moved a whole lot. Thanks, Commissioner.
Any other comments? And we will move our agenda. Employee of the month. Employee of the month, April 2018, Judith Ferretti. Judith Ferretti, Desktop Supervisor for the Information Technology Division. The Commission is pleased to present the Employee of the Month Award to Judith Ferretti, Desktop Supervisor for the Information Technology Division. Judy has been with the IT Division and HSA for over 17 years. Although Judy only took over as desktop supervisor in 2017, she has helped to reshape the desktop team by forming the Tier 3 team, which is assisting with improving first call resolution. Through Judy's organizational skills, customer service focused approach, and attention to detail, her team is able to resolve over 750 desktop-related incidents and tasks every month. Judy has been instrumental in partnering with facilities and operations for numerous office remodels and moves. HSA IT must ensure that the equipment and services are functioning at new locations. Judy's can-do attitude, support of her staff, de-escalation skills, and scheduling expertise have helped to ensure that staff regain access to services post-move with as little inconvenience as possible. Under Judy's operational management, her team upgraded approximately 350 computers within a three-month period for family and children services. Judy and her team worked tirelessly on weekends and off hours to ensure that the computers were imaged and deployed by the due date. Congratulations, Judith.
I just wanted to know about those de-escalation skills.
Yeah, Mr. Rohr?
I just want to add to Commissioner McCrae's comments. Thank you so much. As you know, what do we have in the agency? Probably 1,800 or so users. I mean, the amount of work that it takes to make sure that we can all do our work every day, in large part to you all. You know, I don't recognize what great work you do until you're sitting at your computer like I had this morning and it wouldn't boot up. And so getting a response right away, obviously, is helpful. Thanks to my assistant for printing out my report, or else I would have been speechless. Anyway, thank you so much for your work, and thanks for all your colleagues for showing up, too, to support you.
Commissioner Simo, did you have a comment? Okay. Can we add to your busy schedule the computer work IT for the commissioners? Thank you so very much. The consent calendar is before you. What is your pleasure?
Move approval.
All right, moved and seconded. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, none. Right. Item 7, request for authorizing to proclaim May 2018 as Foster Care Month. Ms. Isom.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Sophia Isom, Program Director in Family and Children's Services. I have the wonderful opportunity to have the oversight of several programs, such as the Resource Family Approval Licensing Program, adoptions, our teaming facilitators, and our successions to transitions program for clients from the ages of 16 to 21. And I'm also the liaison for our public health nurse program. I am here today to give some acknowledgement and request authorization to proclaim May as Foster Care Month. May is National Foster Care Month, a month set aside to acknowledge foster parents, family members, volunteers, mentors, policymakers, child welfare professionals, and other members of the community who help children and youth in foster care find permanent homes and connections. During National Foster Care Month, we renew our commitment to ensuring a bright future for youth and non-minor dependents in our foster care system, and we celebrate all those who attributed to that group and goal. Before I go any further, I would like to ask the foster parents in the room to please come forward. Come on, Don't be shy. Thank you. I would like to thank each of you for coming, but mainly to say that we really appreciate your dedication and commitment to foster youth. We could not do this job alone. And I just want to say to the commission that the experience here ranges from very new caregivers through, I believe Ms. Pat is close to 30 years, 32 years of service as a foster parent with us.
Amen.
You know, and I also want to acknowledge how Foster Care Month came to be. So early on, prior to 1912, foster care was primarily handled by private and religious organizations. And then in 1972, President Nixon proclaimed National Action for Foster Children Week to raise awareness for the needs in foster care. And in 1988, President Reagan issued a presidential proclamation to establish May as the month of national foster care. So I have here a proclamation that I would like to read, urging May 2018 to be declared Foster Care Month. Whereas the family is the foundation of a strong and healthy community, and whereas in San Francisco there are 756 children and youth in foster care, and whereas in San Francisco there are 172 foster youth in non-minor dependent status and essential service to the community in caring for children and youth in foster care. Whereas the importance of the family structure is best served in foster homes that model family living as opposed to group care. And whereas the stability and permanency for children and foster children is of the utmost importance, and whereas permanency is defined as both a process and result that includes the active involvement of the child or youth, and whereas permanency is defined as a permanent connection with at least one committed adult, which may include the biological parents through reunification, or with another adult, family member, fictive kin, adult siblings, or other important individuals in the child's or youth's life who commit to the child through adoption or guardianship, and whereas it is the responsibility of the entire community to make sure that each youth leave foster care in California has a permanent lifelong connection with a caring adult, and whereas San Francisco is in need of dedicated care providers who will strive in partnership with the Human Services Agency to identify and connect children and youth in foster care to permanent lifelong relationships. And whereas dedicated care providers model strength-based and solution-focused engagement with the children and youth in their care with the community-based and government entities providing services and support. Whereas community-based organizations within San Francisco partner with the San Francisco Human Services Agency to provide accessible and culturally relevant family-centered services that meet the unique needs of the family and children we serve now. Therefore, be it resolved that the San Francisco Human Services Commission proclaims May 2018 Foster Care Month and urges all community members to volunteer their talents and energies to honor children and youth in foster care and those who have exited the foster care system during this month. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners? Moved and seconded. Any comments?
Thank you so much for all your work. Thank you.
Thank you. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Thank you. We would like to have the two children's names entered into the record, that they came down to speak and to stand up on behalf of this. What is his name? Aditya Smith. Thank you, Aditya. And what is her name? Lacey Berry. Hey, Lacey. All right, they came down and we voted in favor. Thank you very much, parents. Item B.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Miss.
I am Tiana Wertheim.
Wertheim.
A manager with SF Benefits Net, which I was referenced as both CalFresh and Medi-Cal programs. And I wish I had a number of well-fed clients with me to celebrate the success of CalFresh. But I'll have to speak on their behalf.
Hold on 1 minute. Let them.
Okay.
I don't want to be distracted from you. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm here to read the CalFresh Awareness Month Declaration, and just bear with me because it's a bit of a mouthful. So this is a resolution declaring the month of May 2018 a CalFresh Awareness and Action Month in the City and County of San Francisco, and urging all community members to support efforts to increase awareness of and participation in the CalFresh program. Whereas access to safe, nutritious, and culturally acceptable food is a basic human right and is essential to human health. And whereas food security is a state in which all persons obtain a nutritionally adequate, culturally acceptable diet at all times through local non-emergency sources. And whereas food security is the foundation of a strong and healthy community, and whereas 1 in 4 San Franciscans, especially low-income residents, seniors, families with children, immigrants, young adults, and people who are homeless, suffer disproportionately from hunger and food insecurity. And whereas food insecurity results in poor nutritional intake, unhealthy eating behaviors that persist sometimes for even decades after the food insecurity experience, and is associated with poor health outcomes in all populations and higher healthcare costs. And whereas a robust CalFresh program, known nationally as Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program or SNAP, and formerly known as food stamps, is critical to providing financial resources for food to thousands of San Franciscans. Whereas the average household in San Francisco on CalFresh receives approximately $272 a month for groceries, and CalFresh is provided on an electronic benefits card that can be used in grocery stores, supermarkets, and at all San Francisco farmers markets. Whereas CalFresh spurs the local economy because each CalFresh benefits dollar generates $1.79 as economic multiplier, and the city of San Francisco pays for only 15% of the total cost of administering the program and 0 of the benefit dollars, which means that for $3.6 million of local investment, CalFresh brings in $173 million in benefits and associated economic activity. Whereas approximately 53,000 individuals in San Francisco receive CalFresh, yet an estimated 28,000 additional individuals may be eligible but are not enrolled in CalFresh. Whereas a key opportunity for increasing participation is conducting targeted outreach to people who are likely eligible, such as young adults, seniors, and infants, and women with young children. And whereas another key opportunity for increasing participation includes reducing churn, people who are discontinued from the program and then reapply within 3 months. It's estimated that approximately 20% of the CalFresh participants in San Francisco currently experience churn. And whereas another key opportunity for increasing participation is to debunk myths and fears about participating, especially fears and misconceptions related to immigrant status. And whereas community partners, city agencies, local leaders all have a role to play in furthering awareness about CalFresh and promoting this critical program, therefore, be it resolved that the San Francisco Board of Supervisors proclaims May 2018 CalFresh Awareness and Action Month and urges all community members to support efforts to increase awareness of and participation in the CalFresh program.
Commissioners?
You know, the only thing on this is, given the information that Trent gave us at the beginning of this meeting, it may be appropriate to say something that the Human Service Agency stands against these draconian methods that are being proposed by the federal government to eliminate this very, very important program, especially as it applies to immigration status or words to those effect.
We could add that, yeah, and then submit it. You guys do whatever's necessary to make it official. That sounds good.
Great, thank you.
Okay.
Do I have a second as amended?
Second.
Seconded as amended. All right. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Yes. Thank you very much. Exemplar Human Services.
Yes.
Ms. Arita.
Good morning, Commissioners. Eva Iraeta, Community Services Program Monitor for Welfare to Work Services. The Department of Human Services requests authorization to modify the existing contract with Exemplar Human Services to extend services for the period of July 1st, 2018 to June 30th, 2021 in an amount of $630,000 plus 10% contingency for a revised total amount not to exceed $1,309,000. The purpose of the modification is to continue to provide consulting services, including report production, monthly forums, and analytical services to support CalWORK's Welfare to Work program based upon data extracted from CalWIN. These caseload reports will provide HSA employment specialists with the tools needed to track participation in order for the county to meet the required work participation rate and avoid federal penalties. Since the inception of CalWIN, reporting from the Employment Services subsystem has been lacking effectiveness. Caseload management reports, staff and management have struggled to view the caseload in a broad view across the entire caseload or in detail for client management in an easy, automated, and effective way. Exemplar has worked with multiple counties to gain understanding of the Employment Services data and to produce the reports and data alerts that are crucial for managing the employment services caseload and monitoring participation. Exemplar currently has sole source agreements with numerous California County Human Services agencies. Exemplar will provide performance management services to assist HSA CalWORK's Welfare to Work program in its effort to provide client engagement, work participation, and service effectiveness. The services, including report, monthly forums, and data alerts provided through this contract, have been specifically focused on welfare to work client engagement and progress of client engaged in training and work activities. Exemplar holds proprietary rights to the specifically designed CalWIN system and reporting tool that is unique to the human services field. These data sources will enable the department to analyze and maximize client engagement in the CalWORK's Welfare to Work program, reflect on policy changes, review caseloads, and enhance training. I am available to answer any questions, and Aaron Goldberg from Exemplar and Damon Martinez from CalWORK's are here as well. Thank you.
Okay. Comments?
My just question on this, I understand the importance of this work, and is there any thought, or do we have the ability to, at some point in the future, bring these services into the department?
Commissioner. I think Noelle is here. She might be able to better answer. I'm not sure that the level of expertise and work that they do could be brought in-house just because of the complexity of it, but I will defer to Noelle.
Commissioners, Noelle Simmons, Deputy Director. This is a question that we have raised internally as well. We are building capacity within our own IT shop here at HSA and building greater capacity to do business intelligence work. So this is something we do want to explore. I think one of the things that's unique and potentially difficult to replicate about what Exemplar does is that they're not just generating reports, but they also have a functionality that creates customized daily reports that get emailed directly to individual managers, supervisors, and workers, detailing the specifics of their own caseload and case actions that need to be taken that day. So that's the piece that's been a really big value add and would take a lot of sort of manual effort for us to do that piece using our clerical staff. But the possibility of taking it in-house is something that we can explore in the coming months.
Thank you.
Now that piece of internal operations was helpful. Thank you very much. All right, Commissioner? Motion?
Move approval.
Move second. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
I should say that I didn't include in my report that our CalWORKs work participation rate still is above the required 50%, so largely due to this, or in part due to this.
Good.
I had to, Commissioner.
Good morning.
Seneca. All right.
I'm FCS.
Yeah.
Seneca actually couldn't be here today. I'm Liz Crudo from Family and Children's. Seneca is usually here with me for this contract presentation, but they were unable to make it today. And I'm here to request authorization to enter into a new contract with them for the wraparound program in the amount of $9,100,000 plus a 5% contingency of $455,000 for a total grant amount not to exceed $9,555,000 from July 1st, 2018 through June 30th, 2020. The Seneca Connections Wrap Program began in September 2006, so they've been operating for a number of years with us. It's a partnership program for children and youth in the child welfare, probation, and mental health systems who are at risk or placed in high levels of congregate care so that they may step down to or remain in family settings. It's one of the few opportunities we have for flexible funding through a waiver program, and in the current contract iteration, we've been able to expand that with the use of our 4E waiver program, which has allowed us to serve families and children that were not previously eligible for wraparound, such as in-home voluntary cases, families with children who are not at risk for congregate care but who require supportive and intensive services. For the Juvenile Probation Department, it's allowed them to serve pre-adjudicated youth, and we're also able to continue working with families after the child welfare case closes, including legal guardianship families, and that's been very helpful. Wraparound is a planning process for creating individualized services and supports for children, youth, and their families. It is strength-based and builds on a family's natural supports in their community, such as relationships with family, neighbors, friends, and community members. Seneca serves over 300 children annually. They're meeting their contract targets, and they continue to be a committed and responsive partner. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I know that we've been working with Seneca for a while. How has that work changed given the new mandate in child welfare?
You know, with continuum of care reform,
yes.
I think it will. We haven't seen a lot of change with wraparound per se right now, but I think we will. Like, you know, in the next couple of years, we'll start planning for our next RFP. And I think we really need to step back and think about how continuum of care reform is playing out and how that's going to impact our wrap services. Right now, we have a direct contract with Seneca, and they subcontract with three different agencies, St. Vincent's, Edgewood, and for juvenile probation cases, CJCJ. Edgewood and St. Vincent's are now STRTPs, short-term residential treatment programs.
Very good, very good.
So, you know, we may want to rethink that contracting process. And the fiscal layout with CCR, I think, is still kind of playing out as the state continues to make adjustments with some of the foster care, intensive services, family supports, and foster care placements. So I think we'll have a better handle on what that really is going to look like when we move into planning the next RFP. So we might think about more individualized contracts rather than a subcontracting process. We may want to think about other providers, how the funding is coming to them and how that impacts our wraparound program, and if we need to rethink the numbers, our distance, who we're serving, that kind of thing. All right. So it's still kind of in flux.
Okay, no, thank you. That's very helpful.
Yeah.
Move approval.
Moved, seconded. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Udo. Ms. Leon? Leon. Allied Universal.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
My name is Elizabeth Leon, and I'm a Senior Contracts Manager at the Office of Contract Management. We are requesting authorization to enter into contract with Allied Universal Security Services for a contract amount of $12,704,160 with a 10% contingency for a total not to exceed amount of $13,974,576. This contract will provide unarmed security guard services for 16 sites. Three of these sites are non-HSA sites and are paid for by work order to HSA. These sites include the Department of Child Support Services at 617 Mission, the Adult Probation site at 1315 Evans Avenue, and the Department of Public Health has a site at 1099 Sunnydale Avenue. This contract will start July 1st for a three-year term. Current contract that we are in now ends, of course, June 30th, and it covers both HSA and homelessness and supportive housing sites. However, this new contract that starts July 1st will cover just HSA. So going forward, the two departments will have separate security services contracts. This contract was procured through an RFP that was released through the Office of Contract Administration. Allied Universal was the highest scoring bidder. The funding is a mix of general funds, state and federal funds, and my colleagues from Contracts and Investigations are available to answer any questions that you have. Thank you.
My only question is, I guess on page 14, we're contracting for 130,000 straight hours of protection. And
yep.
Then 2,000 hours estimated of overtime.
Yes.
Okay, so that's what we're paying.
Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions?
You might have said this. Are they the current
Yes,
providers?
They're the incumbent.
Yeah, and there's been a very long and tortuous history of security. So it's nice to see that we have some continuity.
I should say, actually, that they've been very responsive over the last year to a lot of our, I don't want to say complaints. They've really changed and adapted in a lot of ways to perform better services for us. And there were some shortcomings that they've addressed, and they've been very proactive. So I'm pleased that we're able to recontract with them because their services have been much, much improved over the last couple years of their prior contract.
Good. Move approval.